It's kind of inherent in the American economy. Spend more, figure it out later. Happy spends are things that, like, I feel good about spending my money. And the number one happy spend was and is savings. The number one sad spend is paying credit card debt. If we can drive more happy spends, fewer sad spends, it was going to lead to better outcomes for the consumer. So the best way to impact that was to try to help accelerate the pay down of credit card debt and eliminate that burden.
Welcome to FinTech Confidential, bringing you the people, tech, and companies that change how you pay and get paid. Welcome to Accrued, the FinTech Confidential series presented by LoanPro. In this series, we're deconstructing the complexities of lending and exploring compliance, optimization, modernization, and personalization through insightful conversations with the industry's best. I'm Ted Huff, and with my co-host Colton Pond, we'll be guiding you through the intricate lending world, whether you're deep in the LendTech scene or just intrigued by how technology is reshaping lending, you're in the right place. Now, let's dive into this episode of Accrued. Colton, it's great to have you back with me again, man.
Thanks, Ted. It's good to see you again. We're here with a really special guest today, so I'm excited for this episode.
Yeah, today I'm super excited. I know you are, to welcome Joe Heck, the Chief Executive Officer from Happy Money, to the show. Joe, it's fantastic to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. Excited to be with you.
Let's go ahead and kickstart this episode and give you an overview of Happy Money. Happy Money is changing the game when it comes to personal lending, focusing on driving the best possible outcomes for consumers' personal loans. The focus of Happy Money is consolidating credit card debt into lower interest rate unsecured personal loans to reduce debt and reliance on credit cards. Happy Money is a company that offers personal loans with a focus on customer happiness and financial well-being. Happy Money is disrupting the extremely competitive personal lending industry, making a difference in the lives of their over 300,000 members. They funded to the tune of over $6 billion in loans and have been awarded Forbes as the top most customer-centric company in finance. Joe, you've recently been appointed as a chief executive officer at Happy Money, but have been with the organization for over 5 years, driving growth in several of the fundamental roles. One of the things that I noticed is that Happy Money recently closed a strategic transaction led by True Stage Ventures, which we had as a guest on episode 51 of the FinTech Confidential's Leaders One-on-One series. And you also had other institutional investors that participated in that. And it really looks like it set the company up to be positioned to deliver best-in-class lending products. And I'm excited to dive into that a little bit later as we move on. Colton, I would love for you to share some of your insights on the team over at Happy Money.
Well, Joe, it's great to have you. The Happy Money team knows very well of my passion towards Happy Money and the impact that y'all are having in the market and the personal lending industry. I met the Happy Money team a long time ago. The thing I will say is everyone I've met at the Happy Money team, whether it's Joe at the very top as the CEO, down to Chris Courtney, who leads data science, and Killeen Brackey, who leads engineering, and Nick and Murray and Adam on the product side, the entire group are fundamentally great people, like aimed and positioned, trying to make an impact and doing so through helping consumers get out of debt, which is a super honorable mission. Joe's been super fundamental. And in other aspects, I find that the best company leaders are also the best people. Joe definitely emulates that together. So Joe, would love your insights on intro, how you've come to where you're at today, and also kind of key things that you focus on leadership and life and the direction that Happy Money's.
Here's a quick message from the Accrued series sponsor. As default rates continue to rise and margins compress in lending, financial organizations are searching for solutions to combine that operational efficiency with innovation. Look no further, as LoanPro allows lenders to enhance their origination, servicing, collections, and payments using the foundation of a modern lending core. Check out loanpro.io to learn more about how over 600 financial organizations have modernized their tech stack with LoanPro.
Thanks, guys. I again, appreciate being here and sharing a little bit of my story and appreciate the kind words, Cole. The journey to Happy Money was about the people and about the mission of the company. I actually worked for a long time at TrueStage. Now I'm still getting used to that. It was CUNA Mutual for my entire tenure. One of the things that attracted me to Happy Money was just that people-centric mission and the talent that we are able to accumulate here. We do think about the world differently. And I think it's really hard to hold that true in a digitally native environment. And I know we'll jump into some of these questions a little bit later. When I think about just how challenging it is to take like a credit union mission and put it digitally, like that was something that attracted me to how Happy Money operates and the people that are here. I appreciate that. I think the other thing that's always been important to me, look, I'm a Midwest guy. I value grit and solving hard things. Try to do things that are gonna feel good. Everything we do here at Happy Money tends to go through lenses around that. Great people create great products, and it may also makes it fun to work at.
Joe, I have to ask this question. How is Happy Money creating a happier way of lending?
I'll go back to my old credit union days. I used to be an underwriter at a credit union forever ago. The whole credit union mantra of like people helping people showed up primarily in the underwriting process. And how that showed up was a consumer came in, sat at your desk, told you about the situation, what they're trying to do. And you as an underwriter were meant to like help figure out the right way to solve their financial problem. Mapping that digitally was really an interesting endeavor. And it was something that I think Happy Money got a really good jump on. I would say there's two different ways that are probably the most exciting here. We take a behavioral science approach. So really trying to understand the ability and intent to pay in leveraging data, because again, I think everybody's aware, like you can't drive a bunch of friction into the funnel. I can't ask a million questions and expect somebody to come out on the other end of my funnel. How do I engage in a way that like the give get on data is helpful to both of us? So I think that's one piece of it. We rely on a lot of cash flow data to understand that. It's something I think we do as well as anybody. And ultimately what comes out of that is we start with a human-centric approach. We have a digitally native underwriting approach that takes into account the human being on the other end and their financial situation, which allows us to, you know, stretch a little bit beyond like what just a FICO score would give us, which really slow to react to the changing circumstances of a human. It is built into our DNA to design a happier way of engaging the consumer for both the consumer, ourselves, and our partners.
Could you quickly run us through the journey of Happy Money from the inception and the idea when it started to where it is today?
I wasn't here for the entire journey. Shockingly, we've been around for 14, almost 15 years now. I'll give a ton of credit and appreciation for the vision that the founder had. The founder really talked about coming out of the 08-09 crisis with this really bright view that like companies have really fragile balance sheets, right? Anything could tip them over. But the consumer did too. When you think about this concept of resiliency for the consumer, it was something that was really being sub-optimized with the way the world works. We were able to kind of engage in that as a company. You were starting to see things that show up at persistently, which is the more debt somebody had, the more limited their cash flow had, the increased like levels of stress that they had to manage through. We did an academically rigorous assessment around cash flow versus stress and found really clear signal. The symptoms were showing up and really challenging somebody's life. So it was like, because my stress level's high, because of my financial situation, I'm losing sleep. I'm avoiding opening my bank statements. I'm avoiding opening the bills. And you start to just see this snowball effect of negative outcomes. And really that was one of the founding kind of principles of this, is like, if we could help people drive more financially savvy decisions and help them like understand their cash flow position, then they would ultimately have better outcomes and hopefully return and reduce their levels of stress, which, by the way, like reduces risk on the loan asset as well. So everybody creates a better winning outcome in that environment.
I have a passion towards happy money, the mission and vision y'all are working on. When I was at MX Technologies, I became a good friend with the CTO, the co-founder and CTO, Brandon DeWitt. And a lot of people know his story, but he was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer and had 30 days to live. Brandon started doing research and looking at the impact of financial stress on people. The highest leads to the highest rate of suicide. Highest predictor of suicide is financial stress. Highest predictor of divorce, financial stress. And they came to this conclusion that, man, there are problems bigger in the world than even stuff that Brandon was going through and others. And financial stress that people have in their lives is tremendous and leads to a lot of downstream consequences. And especially where happy money being focused on this market of taking your credit card debt and refinancing that credit card into a lower interest personal loan that you eventually pay off. Help us understand the decision to focus there and the impact that's had on the company's direction.
The like number one driver of financial stress is typically credit card. We're at records amount again. And I say again because I've been here 5 years and I think we've hit records a couple of different times. It's kind of inherent in the American economy as well. Is spend more, figure it out later. And when we looked at a lot of the data set, it was like, hey, the saddest spend for people, the happy money kind of ethos is like, hey, happy spends are things that like, I feel good about spending my money. And the number one happy spend was and is savings. The number one sad spend is paying credit card debt. And so one of the big drivers here is like, hey, if we can drive more happy spends, fewer sad spends, and this is back in, call it 2014, 15, it was going to lead to better outcomes for the consumer. So the best way to impact that was to try to help accelerate the pay down of credit card debt and eliminate that burden, if you will. We actually don't call our loan a credit card debt consolidation loan. We call it a debt elimination loan because we are looking for aligned consumers and aligned partners that are trying to help people get completely out of debt. We're looking to make sure that we're aligning interests across the value chain. And I would say like one additional item that I think gets underappreciated about our model is just how valuable an ethos aligned partner group of credit unions really is, because it allows a lot of flexibility to like go back to that original mission of people helping people.
Hey, Ted Huff here. Ever thought about how you could streamline your application and underwriting process? Well, let me introduce you to Under. Why keep using the outdated methods of PDFs when you can digitize them effortlessly? All you gotta do is upload the PDF, send it out for digital signature, and voila, you're set for the digital age. Are you curious on how to make that happen? Head over to under.io/FTC and get started for free. It's really that simple. It's interesting to listen to how you guys have differentiated yourselves in a number of different areas. And it's funny for me because a lot of times market differentiation tends to be a slogan or a new website design or a new topic that they want to talk about. If you were to summarize down what Happy Money's top three differentiators are, especially in the personal lending market, what would they be?
I'm going to shoot from the hip a little bit here. I think one is our ethos aligned partners. Like having credit unions as our partners, I think holds the entire value chain accountable to doing the right thing. And I think that, you know, we don't struggle with that accountability. It's one we embrace. And I think having them be a part of our mission, vision, and product set, they're not transactional partners. They're strategic. The second piece, I would say, we look at risk differently. We're not myopically focused on a FICO score. We look at that as a piece of the data set, but we're really trying to understand the cash flow position of an individual and underwrite to that individual. So I think we have an ability to personalize at scale that a lot of others kind of miss on that creates really good alignment. The third is just, I would think of how we think about our product. Our product isn't, the team thinks differently. They're not traditional finance people. So they're looking for, they're leveraging their experience outside the financial industry and putting it to work inside the financial industry. So rather than us being, you know, complacent in our product set, we worked with TrueStage to develop a product that, you know, would pay payments for the consumer during a point of instability. So if they become unemployed, we'll pay up payments for them for a period of time. Same if they became disabled and couldn't afford. So when you go back and bleed that back to how we think about stress impacting, like we're now implementing a product within a feature within our product that will reduce stress and arguably one of the most stressful events anybody could undergo, which is loss of job or loss of income. We're bridging them for a period of time. It also pulls the risk down with our partners. So it's a win for the consumer. It's a win for us at Happy Money, and it's a win for our credit union partners. I would say it's products and features like that that show up here in our innovation that that represent like ongoing continued differentiation for us as a company.
One of the themes we've talked about in this mini series has been taking the lending experience from transaction-based to relationship-based. And Happy Money is the perfect example. I've had lots of conversations with the data science team and Chris Courtney around, and you mentioned it, not looking at consumer and FICO number, but looking at broader aspects on cash flow underwriting, cash flow position, and other data points. And I feel like this is, once again, a key differentiator. Help the audience, if you don't mind, understand how you think about underwriting from a high level.
Let me maybe start with what a perception of the world right now is like, and I think most would agree, is like during this COVID cycle, underwriting risk has become, I would say, more than challenging. I would say one of the big drivers of that is like a lack of fidelity really in, or even a lack of confidence in that the FICO's telling the necessary story. Most have seen credit score migration. I would say it's almost a full tier elevation across the board. Super primes acting more like prime, primes acting more like near prime, and near primes acting more like subprime. Trying to like calibrate to that is a really difficult equation. Not trying to claim that we're getting it right every day, but I do think I'd look at our tool set and say like the humanistic approach and looking more real time at cash flow data has helped us adapt more quickly to changing economic circumstances. I find it a really interesting way to dig into how we do 100% income verification at Happy Money. And the way we do that helps us see how people are living their day-to-day lives. We're looking at trended data across the board. And that helps us see like which way, which direction is the data starting to move. And that compilation of both sides of the consumer's balance sheet, we're looking for people that like have the right income, lack the right tools. And so, you know, when you fine tune your underwriting engine to look for that use case, I look forward to a day where we can just be like, oh, it's going to be a normal year. I've been here 5 years and I haven't seen a normal year.
Is there such thing as a normal year?
I don't know. There used to be.
Not anymore in financial services. That's for sure.
As you described all the different things that you at Happy Money do to identify and really work through the understanding of the risk of each one of these individual personal loans, what's the impact that you've seen using the cash flow underwriting on the influence of reducing your overall risk, reducing the overall default rates, and in turn, reducing the credit losses for your capital partners?
I think it's top of mind for everybody right now. Our portfolio, just like everybody else's, has experienced stress throughout this cycle. We continue to manage that. I think as we look forward, I feel like from a tool set standpoint, we're super well positioned to continue to understand and react to risk changes. I think when you think about anybody in this world, it's really about like the agility in the ability to understand and see change, look around corners. You got to continue to manage the risk that you take. But the way I view the world around this is like FICO is a little bit of a stale representative of where a consumer's financial position is. Doesn't react to income very quickly, doesn't react to loss of job quickly at all. And we think about like the savings and resiliency of a consumer, like you can prop up your FICO score for quite a while. The way we kind of think about the whole experience allows us to see into that better, which ultimately provides better risk return profile for all of our partners down the line. Look, most people innovate around rate. I think that's a one piece of agility you can have. What are we missing in the profile to rate better? Well, there's other things a consumer can do that are showing us the right behaviors that show us that it's a risk profile that's better than a FICO score, that's better than what we're seeing. We continue to innovate around those edges because I think that's the only way to continue to win in this market. We do an unsecured loan. It's focused on a use case. We're really good at it. But look, an unsecured loan's been around for what? Thousands of years? We're making it easy. We're looking at it differently. Consumers just don't look at products the same way all of us in the financial services space do. Mm-hmm. It's our language. It's our world we live in. And we just expect everybody else to understand it. When we start to move beyond that and start to simplify and make products that people can make better decisions, fix their problems with, I think that's when we'll start to move forward beyond just like offline to online productization, which is a little bit of how I still feel we're stuck.
As you're talking about the alternative credit models and alternative ways to get information, looking at cash flow as an underwriting process, as we've gone through this series, it's been really interesting to hear how many of the lenders are starting to look at this additional alternative, and I use air quotes, alternative data. It's data that's there. I don't know why we call it alternative, but what are you seeing as the linchpin for mass adoption of this alternative data, like the cash flow underwriting and evaluating way beyond just the credit scores?
Ted, I looked at your background a little bit before this and I can tell your product. When I think about product and taking things beyond where they're at today, it's not dragging customers to where you want to be. And so this idea of like alternative data is going to help me. There's this give-get relationship that has to be uncovered. Like what value is the consumer going to get for giving you data and what value do they get in that transaction? Some of it's like efficiency and ease of use. Some of it's better pricing. Unless you have that DNA in your building, like it's a very difficult proposition to uncover longer term. Where I see this idea of alternative data, I think the value prop around how do you acquire it and help the consumer understand why it's of value to them as well. I feel like that's the missing linchpin. And I just think it's going to be the product focused, consumer focused entities that really tap into that over time. But that's a DNA thing. And it can go off track really, really quickly. The ego and the tribal knowledge inside your walls. And again, I'll claim victimhood on this. I've done it to myself. I've done it to my customers. I know better than what they're saying. You got to involve the customer in that process. And it's one of the things I really value about our DNA is like our customers, our credit unions, our strategic partners. So they're part of that. The consumers we get feedback from. That is the piece that's largely under-leveraged.
I feel like oftentimes, and you were at CUNA Mutual or True Stage for a long time, you know this, but the credit union market sometimes gets overlooked and people are so focused on banks and not what the impact the credit unions can have. Help us understand and share with the audience Happy Money's decision or reason behind partnering with credit unions and capital partners and how that's given you a different edge in the market.
Happy Money was down this path pretty significantly when I came here. I helped them scale it beyond where they were at. I spent a lot of time with our early customers to try to understand what was it about Happy Money that they liked and what they didn't like about Happy Money. One of the things that always continued to resonate was this idea that like we were trying to align the consumer's best interest with the financial institution's best interest. And doing that digitally native and at scale is something all credit unions and subscale FIs in general really will struggle with. It's a significant investment into tech. It's a significant investment into people and process. There's a lack of individual scale to be able to access certain channels. Like An example of that's going to be Credit Karma and NerdWallet. Those are two great partners for us where consumers are going to try to understand their financial well-being. They're getting all these offers from banks and Capital One and all, credit unions don't have the scale to be on page one there typically. Our model brings a brand and an ethos that's aligned with theirs and brings that access point with like more of an aggregate scale, opening up new channels that would otherwise be relatively inaccessible.
The most common cause of bad customer experience isn't that high tech. It's embarrassingly simple. Yep, it's answering questions. In e-commerce, it's really easy to get bogged down with common questions, whether that's where's my package, how do I return or exchange this item, or just to cancel a subscription. DolphPath is an AI-driven customer support system that enhances the customer experience with visual formats and self-serve technology to empower your customers to handle their own support requests. Get the best customer support system for your business. Get SolvePath. Get started by visiting getsolvepath.com.
So we've talked a lot about credit unions and your partnership in that area. What other areas are you looking to expand the Happy Money Capital Partner Network? And is there a specific focus that you're targeting?
We're staying within the credit union sector for the large part. We value that alignment. What's important to me is how do we set up Happy Money for what I would consider the future of fintech, which is how do we engage the consumer and help solve their problems? We can't solve everybody's problem with an unsecured loan. That's like hammer running around looking for nails. It just doesn't work that way.
You've mentioned this a couple times, is taking everything you do from the product development to member support. See, I did it right there. The member support. And looking at it through the credit union lens. And in other episodes, we've spoken about the shift in lending from that transactional, I'm going to give you this unsecured loan, you're going to pay me back, and hopefully we never have to talk to each other again, and moving that over to more of a relationship basis where the members, in your case, are having ongoing experiences with Happy Money. How has that transition in the marketplace in general impacted the way you treat borrowers like members?
To me, this is probably, again, I probably feel like I'm belaboring the partnership side of this, but the reality is what we're trying to do is we're trying to acquire a digitally native consumer that's showing the right behavior, attitude that they want to be out of debt. We bring them, introduce them to one of our credit union partners, and they have a good experience with us because we're representative of our partners. But I think the second is, how do we make them aware of other products and services that the credit union has? So we continue to run tests on that. No surprise, in 2024, we ran a lot of deposit tests to try to help with the deposit liquidity crunch that most FIs were under. In that case, like within our servicing, we would highlight the deposit rates of our partners. We would highlight whatever CD rate they might have on specials. To me, it's like, how do we create like that? Strategic partnerships are bi-directional. And that means it can't always be about us doing, like asking them for more. Like they should have the pipeline to ask us for help on things too. And we should have the capacity to help on that front. I think longer term, we have an ability to drive more engagement with our borrowers into these credit unions that can bring better products and services than most people. And whether it be from a rate perspective or just a community centric focus, like, these guys are in the best interest of the consumers, and they don't just try to cram products down their throats. It's much more of a needs-based approach, which I think is again, back to this alignment of how we treat people.
Joe, we've talked a little bit about how focusing on the borrower-centric approach influences things like credit losses and default rates. What we haven't drilled into that I'd love to understand is how it influences Happy Money's perspective on things like technology spend and personalized experiences and things like that. Give us some perspective on your thoughts there of the need to focus and drive investment in those areas.
I look at like our tech stack and I look at how we operate from a value perspective. And I try to bucket things into three buckets. There's our systems of infrastructure, which I consider that like a nuclear reactor. Like, you know, blast radius is really big if we screw something up and you want to be careful with that.
But all I can think of in my mind is Homer Simpson. Sorry. I'm thinking Homer Simpson pressing the wrong button.
Right. And you don't want someone to press that wrong button, right? So the second bucket is more, I don't need a bunch of agility. I don't need a bunch of bells and whistles. I just need it to work all day, every day. And I need to just be careful. Then I think of systems of differentiation. And I think about this again at the value prop level. Like, where do we want to like really win in the market? We want to continue to invest and be on the edge there. But we have to be nimble. We have to be smart and we have to continue to keep that our edge. And then there are systems of innovation where we should experiment. We should break things, but the blast radius is really small. I'm not going to go out to market with a product that, I don't have high confidence already provides value. I should have put that in my systems of innovation, tested it, figured it out, and then flex it into my systems of differentiation. And the reason I say it that way is because I think all too frequently, everything's differentiation or innovation. I'll quote one of my good buddies from forever ago, is everything special, nothing special. A lot of fintech lenders treat their lending partners as infrastructure. We treat ours as differentiation. And I think like that, and how we invest in them, how we think about them, it's really important that we like categorize that correctly, or you end up underinvesting and kind of ignoring it. And then, you know, you wake up 3 years from now and everything's like your foundation's completely crumbling because you didn't take the proper care and feeding.
Joe, we've come to the time in the episode where I like to ask our guest to pull out their crystal ball and look into it to see ahead into the future. Where do you see the trends in financing heading, especially with Happy Money leading the charge?
Wow. If there's anything that I've learned in the last 5 years is that I don't have a clue where the world is going. I continue to be surprised.
Transparency.
I mean, to be clear, we didn't ever launch a crypto coin. So I feel like really good we didn't get distracted in that one. But, I look at AI in particular. And I look at that not as a solution, but, more as a tool that I think can help solve some challenges that have been here forever. When I think of the difference between moving from offline to online, I think, you know, for the most part, fintech has been there. As I think about the next stage of the journey, it's how do we reinvent the products to make them simpler and easier to engage with? And when I look at where AI is going, like one of the real big needs in the market is around personalizing at scale. And people don't want to pick up the phone. They want things to work, but they also want the advice and they want to feel smart about their decisions. And finance is uncomfortable. When I think about what AI can help bridge during that period is like, I view our company as like, we want to continue to automate and make easy the mundane. We want to humanize the experience. And I think like that's where we're super well positioned is to continue down this road. We have an incredible data set that we understand how consumers react and manage their money. We understand how they engage with debt. We understand how they engage with their savings. We have a really interesting data set to continue to drive that personalization with a whole new tool set that like arguably didn't exist 3 to 5 years ago. So I'm excited about the scale and efficiency that these new tools are going to be able to provide. And really change the way we interact. And again, I think our DNA is that advantage.
Yeah, you know what, Ted? This last section, we should just name it AI. Because almost every time we ask...
I know.
You know, funny enough, everyone mentions AI, and it's one of two directions. It's either is future, or like AI is overrated. I don't know about it, but it's never in the middle. It's always one or two.
Yeah, it's definitely a polarized discussion.
Really?
We bring in AI.
We could do a whole micro series on AI and overrated or underrated, for sure.
See, the way I'll take it from two different approaches. One is, because I came from enterprise land. When I look at AI for enterprise land, it's like, good luck getting through the firewalls, right? I think those guys are going to be such slow adopters and like leveraging it as like complementary tools. I look at our business and it's like, okay, on one hand, there's the consumer element and I get excited about, like, a lot of people don't know this, but we have a patent on like these personalized chatbots that give advice. We had them launched a while ago, don't really use them right now. But like when I think about AI enabling those, it's an incredible, like, you know, 'cause we had like a sassy chatbot. We had all sorts of fun stuff on that front.
Give them all different personalities.
Yeah, it was. It was like matching a personality, the chatbot with the personality of the consumer. And so super cool way to actually do that now versus like having someone in the back office rip scripts out, right? The other side is like, I do think like Happy Money's in a sweet spot. It'll be interesting how this shapes where we have the money and we have like the lack of scale where we can implement AI in a real way that lets us scale our business differently. Then larger companies are going to be able to do it. And like,
well, you just brought up something, Joe, that like, I guess in the back of my mind, I've been thinking about, but the way you just said it, the level of scale that a business has today, whether it be lending, whether it be anything, but the less scale that a business has in that space, the easier it's going to be for them to adopt AI and other tools. Going back, you're right, I'm a product guy, but going back to that piece of it, you know, I look back and when I was looking at the buy, build, partner, and I still do that quite a bit, I really look at how do I bring that scalability into those organizations? And I hadn't really thought about that being a massive determination between not just if, but how and what types of AI get brought in to a financial organization, especially around consumer lending.
Well, think about the pace of adoption. And I would say there's a little bit of a Goldilocks scenario with this where like the really small, like, I don't know if you've looked at a subscription to OpenAI, but it ain't cheap. So when I look at like the smalls, they don't have enough money to actually leverage it.
Support provided by Skyflow. What if you could build fast but not break privacy? What if you could ensure data privacy, governance, and compliance with just a few API calls? What if you could worry less about PCI requirements while actually improving privacy and security? How much more time would your team have to truly innovate? How much faster could you build and ship new features? How much more powerful could your app be? Skyflow is a zero-trust data privacy vault delivered as an API. Skyflow's radically simple design lets you collect, secure, and tokenize personal information like card data and payment details. And with built-in features like encrypted data analysis and sharing, anonymization, and advanced governance, your days of choosing between data security and data usability are over. Whether you're just concerned with PCI compliance or need to go further to include CCPA, GDPR, SOC 2, and beyond, Skyflow has you covered. What if you could build fast but not break privacy? With Skyflow, you can. Visit skyflowsecure.com today to learn how.
The bigs have too much potential, like tech debt and inertia to like retool. Like, I think these mid-sized ones that have the money and lack the sacred cows, if you will, I think that's where the Goldilocks scenario is going to live for the early adopters. It's something we talk about internally because I'm like, I do feel like we're uniquely positioned to optimize and rebuild the way, not even rebuild, but like scale the company differently than a lot of our competitive set that have already scaled and are now trying to figure out how to retool. We've scaled significantly, but not to the point where like we can undo some things.
And I love it. Joe, you officially have the best answer for AI section of the miniseries. Congratulations for sure. I also can't help but think about, and Ted will like this because he thinks about and envisions things and we have these episodes. Salesforce has been doing commercials on like Matthew McConaughey, Scenes a Rabbit, and like, will the future of AI go anywhere? And it's like so ambiguous. It's like, Yeah. Let's actually get to things that can drive an impact and difference. And I agree with your perspective in that middle organization poised to use AI in the right way to drive significant impact for Happy Money.
No, definitely. And I appreciate it, guys. I think, look, there's no crystal ball anymore. And if it does, it sees, well, it's like maybe 3 weeks in advance. Maybe to the next Fed funds discussion. The constant for all of us has continued to be like, look, we got to have business agility. We got to invest in our differentiation, in our innovation. We do those things. I think like we'll continue to march along and build products and services that actually have a positive outcome for both our consumers and our partners. That remains our focus. And we just have to stay true to that. And I think all the decisions kind of like map to that get a lot easier.
Well, Joe, you teed me up so perfectly for my last question of the episode. So I appreciate that very much. You've talked about being agile. You've talked about making sure that you deliver the right things to the customers. You've talked about continuing to move forward with new technologies. Infrastructure is one of the things that a lot of people think about last, and it has a massive impact. And just like we talked about with scale, you have to choose the right things. How have you been looking at infrastructure and keeping up with what your members need?
I'll maybe frame my thought process is like, and a lot of the way I think about the world is people, process, technology, and in reverse order. And I would say the way I think about your question is more bad technology can drive bad process and cost into the equation. When we look at our infrastructure, even the nuclear reactors has to like be designed in a way that's efficient for people to use. It's got to be designed in a way that we can plug and play our systems of differentiation into it efficiently. I like to think about all of this as like an ROI on, you know, degrees of confidence that I'm going to get the value that I think I'm going to get. I like to think about, you know, the cost of the time value of putting the energy and money into it. If it doesn't, you know, all it does is burden me with obstacles where I really want to be is, which is with my customer figuring out how to solve their problems. Like I don't want my people thinking about, oh my God, it's going to be like, you know, 700 APIs to integrate and tie off and test and learn. It's the inefficient speed to market.
The theme of this mini series of optimization and how to optimize what you're doing. Brett, our CEO, talks about technology is the bottom layer of the cake, but there's other cake layers like process and people and all of those things that if the technology is or infrastructure in the background and just operates, it allows you to truly innovate and drive efficiency forward.
Well, Joe, let me just maybe add to that because you kind of back to like philosophical here. Like I think my role as a CEO and my role as any leader versus manager is I wake up every day thinking, how can I optimize my people? And going back to the AI topic, the infrastructure topic, like those are all tools. I don't think about technology replacing people. I think about it as optimizing people. And that's got to be our line of thinking because I think you get yourself in a really replaceable position with your customer if all you're trying to do is implement tech to replace people. Like you just become this giant commodity that nobody really cares about and there's very limited differentiation left. Like the people are the ones who design the differentiation. And if I don't have great talent there and they're thinking about that every day, then I'm losing. I say this far more frequently than I care to admit. I want to play to win. I don't want to play not to lose. And that's how I want my team acting.
I love it. Joe, thank you for the insights. Super insightful. If I think back to our conversation today and all of the things we said, one core message comes out from my perspective. It's back to the basics, focus on the customer. So often we forget about the customer and focus everything we do from product development, from how we engage, from new technology spend, from how we think about on the lending collection strategy. In the end, talk to your customer, understand the job they're trying to solve, the job to be done, and go solve that job in a more efficient way for them. And I love what Happy Money is doing in driving differentiation.
If I stated it one way, you're only as good as your partners. And it's really nice to see how Happy Money is strategically aligning with specific partners to deliver the best possible experience for their members. And that's one of the things that I really enjoyed learning today while sitting down with you, Joe.
Yeah, no, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. I think you're both aligned with how I think about it. I appreciate the partnership with you guys as well.
Well, that's another episode of Accrued, a FinTech Confidential series presented to you by LoanPro. If you haven't already, and if you've made it this far, go ahead, subscribe, like all that other fun stuff, and sign up for the weekly email newsletter to let you know about all the great things that we're talking about, as well as special opportunities to learn more.
As we wrap up today's episode, I've got one last thing for you. If you're in the trenches fighting fraud and financial crime, you know it's a complex battlefield. That's where Hawk's AI tools for real-time payment screening, AML, transaction monitoring, and dynamic customer risk rating come into play. These aren't just buzzwords. They're game changers designed to make your compliance more effective and less of a headache. Imagine slashing through false positives with precision and giving your compliance strategy the edge it needs. Head on over to gethawkai.com to sign up for a demo and discover how their platform can revolutionize how you fight fraud and financial crime.
This has been a production of DD3 Media with all rights reserved. This is provided for informational purposes only. It is not offered or intended to be used as legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. We strive to provide accurate and up-to-date information, but will not be responsible for any missing facts or inaccurate information. You comply and understand that you should use any of this information at your own risk. Cryptocurrencies are highly volatile financial assets, so research and make your own financial decisions.